Hare Krishna. So thank you very much for making it through another day. And I really admire and appreciate that all of you have been sitting through about, I would say about 4 hours of lecturing by now, and you're still sitting. So please give yourself a round of applause. So talking about knowledge in the context of faith, it's a bit of a challenge. You mean you're talking about faith, everything is, like in the previous lecture, these wonderful devotees, they have protection of Krishna, they're coasting along, and then knowledge. So it's like, you know, it's like you go to a party and you meet your teacher over there. You know, it's a rasabhas, you know, in a way. But we are followers of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave a lot of stress on knowledge. And, one of his main services were, writing books. So important for us to look at this interaction between faith and knowledge. And the topic I'm going to speak about is blind faith to blinding faith. So we'll basically look at how knowledge impacts one's beginning of faith, maturity, and perfection of faith. So I wanted to start with a little bit of a questionnaire. I'll put some things on the screen, and if you could let me know that are these things accepted on the basis of faith or on the basis of knowledge? The sun will rise tomorrow. Is this faith or knowledge? It's knowledge. There are oceans of milk and sugarcane juice in this universe. It's based on faith. Earth is about 3/4 covered with water. It's knowledge. The symptom of soul is consciousness. I get a 50-50. Faith, knowledge. All objects of mass will attract one another. Knowledge. Matter is made of atoms. I have one outlier. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Liberate us. Wait. Okay. So we had some items of faith, and yes, Prabhu.
How do you define knowledge? Does it seem like it's experiential, understanding, or?
Okay, thank you very much. So you're giving me a segue into what I'm going to speak. I didn't set it up. He's actually asking that question. So I also wanted to thank that most of you actually gave wrong answers. So, you know, I was thinking, when I was preparing this slide, I was thinking everybody gave the right answer, I might just get up and go away. So, gives me an opportunity to talk about, to discuss something. So, let's look at the dictionary definitions. That knowledge is facts, information, and skills acquired by a person through experience or education, the theoretical or practical understanding of a subject. So we theoretically know that Krishna is God. So that should be knowledge. The fact that sun will rise tomorrow is basically something that we are extrapolating from our past. We don't know for certain. Just because it rose yesterday and day before and for 25 million years before that, we are simply extrapolating it. But there will definitely be one day when the sun will not rise. And then this is no longer a fact. What is faith? Faith is complete trust or confidence in someone or something. So the fact that 3/4 of the earth is covered with water, none of us has traveled the earth and measured whether how much of it is land or water. Somebody has told us, and we believe that. But we said it is knowledge. But it is actually something that we are saying on faith. And spiritual faith is strong belief in the doctrines of a religion. So I wanted to start off with with a little bit of understanding of the difference between faith and in the current environment, they're almost put in two separate compartments. That you either have faith or you have knowledge. They're almost like mutually exclusive forces. So knowledge comes from science. So if you notice that the things in the question were that related to science, almost all of you said that it was items of knowledge. Faith comes from spirituality. So these are the conventional distinctions that we apply between the two. In science, we study books of knowledge, like the Newton's Principia or articles of technical journals. In religion, we study the books of scriptures, like the Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, the Old Testament. Science is democratic. So in science, if I say something, another person can contradict and a third person may support. In fact, people who do research in science, when somebody publishes something, then they will read it to see if they can contradict it. And that's how they get their own recognition. Religion is dogmatic. Dogmatic in the sense that when somebody tells you something, you accept it. It's not that I take a poll that how many of you think that Krishna is God, and based on that I say, okay, now we established that this is the new truth. Science can be used, verified, and relied on. Religion cannot. So this is the conventional distinction that we have. So the point is that why does science or knowledge reject religion or faith? And it goes a little bit to the creation of science itself. So the way that science works, and I'm sure I'm speaking to some of the people who know a lot less than I do, the way that science works is that it tends to objectify the subject. So you throw a ball up in the air and it comes down. What science will do is, it'll come up with an equation that describes the motion of that ball. And so this is an abstraction that it does of the phenomenal world around. And that is fine. That's how the science works. But then what science does is that if it cannot objectify something, it refuses to acknowledge it. So that's the limitation of science. So it rejects things that it cannot account for. So in Washington DC many years ago, there was a convention of cosmologists. Who basically talk about stuff like when did the universe come into existence, what's going on. So there was one very famous cosmologist who made this point that given the anti-entropic nature of the universe, so entropy is chaos. And the natural order the natural way the universe works is from order to chaos. So if you throw a bunch of bricks up in the air, very, very unlikely that they'll fall down and make a house. Right? That's not the way nature works. They'll break up and they'll crumple further. But the matter of fact is that there is a lot of order in the universe. So, and the scientists have an explanation for that it is because of the probability. That you throw bricks 10 million times, then maybe one time out of them, you'll get a house. So they work on that premise. And so this is a scientist who accepts that premise, but he says that given the probability of order coming from chaos, the age of the universe does not justify it. There has to be much more time that would have passed before this kind of order comes out of chaos. So the next day the newspaper reported that no one wants to take a cop out by introducing the topic of God. Because if you do not accept the fact that the universe came by itself, what do you accept? Somebody created the universe. So this is the whole intelligent design school of thought. A lot of them are actually atheists. They don't really believe that God created, but they believe there's some other intelligent being created. But still they are subscribing to the fact that there is an intelligent design. And everybody rejected it. Because the moment that you introduce God into science, then it's like you're going to play tennis and somebody removes the net and the court boundary, somebody takes away your rackets and the ball and say, okay, you play tennis now. So when you introduce God into science, then what the scientists feel, that all the equipment that they have to make science speak what they want it to speak, are taken away. So essentially what science does is that if it cannot explain anything, it will reject it. On the other hand, religion does not reject science. So in the Vedas, there is a whole section known as the Upavedas. And they talk about economics and astronomy. There is even Kama Sutra. There is how to trade. There is Niti Shastra, Dharma Shastra, all aspects of science. So one of the questions that you could ask is that if the scientists are objectifying matter to create science, then who is motivating the scientists to do that objectification? And this goes back to the question of consciousness, which is even more subtle than science. Then is science really complete? There are so many scientific laws that we see that we accept. That there's a law of gravitation that and you throw an apple and it comes down, and Newton came up with this Newton's law of gravity. But then the question is that why does it come down? Why doesn't it go up? So what Newton did was he recorded something that was happening and reported on it. He did not create the law of gravitation. Or there are so many other principles and they are just reporting on what is going on. But if you keep doing why, ultimately the answer will be we do not know yet. So the knowledge component of the scientific model is grossly overrated. In science, there is something known as NP complete. So those of you who are mathematicians will know it, that this is a whole group of problems that actually exceed the problems that have been solved that science knows that it cannot solve. So they are unsolvable, like the Hamilton circuit, the traveling salesman. So those are the problems that you know for a fact cannot be, that science has accepted that it cannot solve. So just the knowledge component of science is, and science works very hard to make it authoritative. Like in the Time magazine, you'll see that the medical section will say that if you do this, then your health will be better. I've been reading Time for many years, and there's one page that I read. And I know that, you know, next year they'll say something else. And they won't even acknowledge the fact that they were saying something different a year before. So there's, you know, and both the statements are equally authoritative, based on experiments, based on this and that, and whatever it is. You should take one aspirin every day. It's the best thing for you. And then they say, not really, it might harm your liver 1 year later. No, they'll say that. So the question is, why is science so popular? And this goes back to our existential reality. So existential reality is, what is it that you perceive? When you go into a room, you'll see things that are of interest to you. When a devotee comes to your house, what is the first thing that they will see? They'll see the altar. They'll see the deities. They'll go and give dandavas to the deities. That's what interests them. Somebody else comes to your house, they may look at your curtains. So these are really very nice drapes. Right? Somebody else may come to you and say, you have really good furniture. This, you know, where did you get this furniture? That's their frame of reality. So people reject spirituality not because it is incomplete or not because it is unable to deliver. They reject spirituality because it is of no interest to them. It is not part of their existential reality. And if you look at it, even science operates on a platform of faith. So all of us went to school, and when we went to school, the teacher came in and said, he wrote something on the board, and we opened our notebook and we copied it. You know, we didn't say, but are you really sure that this is what it is? And you know, how, so what were we doing it? We were accepting it on faith, right? When they taught us Newton's law of motion, we accepted that on faith. When they taught us Einsteinian, that which basically negates the Newton law, we accepted that also on faith. Not many of them are going to, are going to split atoms and look at the quarks. They say this is what's going to happening. In fact, the whole science of atoms, they call it metaphysics. It's not really physics. It looks like physics, but it's kind of in the twilight zone. So, one might say that science is verifiable and repeatable. You do a scientific study and you repeat it and you'll get the same results. So I wanted to share a pastime of Srila Prabhupada in this context, that Prabhupada, and this was when late 70s, Prabhupada was very, very sick. He was in India at the time. And there was a program that was done in Surat. So Surat, I think, is in Maharashtra, right? It's in Gujarat. That's how much I know my geography. So not enough knowledge. And so Surat is in Gujarat, and the Prabhupada and his disciples, they went to Surat, and Prabhupada was sick, so he was staying in his room, and the disciples, they, on Prabhupada's order, they would go out and do Harinam. And the Harinam caught up so much over there that the whole city actually closed down. Everybody was coming. It was truly a Nagar Sankirtan. People were coming and out on the streets. Work stopped. People were doing. And the devotees were really, really enthused. And Prabhupada also got enthused. So one day he said that I'll go. And then he went out. And for a short while he did Kirtan. When he was trying to come back, then he was completely surrounded by people over there. Someone was trying to touch his feet, somebody was just trying to touch him, somebody was trying to look at him, and somehow or else, his disciples, they carried him back to the room. And then Prabhupada looked at them and said that, do you know why all these people are trying to worship me? I said, why Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, because I have no sex life. So Prabhupada, with humility, he was trying to show that what is the potency of the process. If you follow a celibacy, people will worship you. We follow it completely. So when we take to Krishna consciousness, we are given the four regulative principles. If we follow it, we'll see the change. It's completely repeatable and verifiable. All we have to do is, just like when you do a scientific experiment, for those of us who are in science, you know, we would have to do it in the labs. We would never get the results. We would just basically copy it from somewhere. That's because we never followed the process. You know, it would be like, do this, do that, do that. And nobody had their patience, you know. They would obviously be somebody else's lab book, and we'd just copy, you know. And if we did, we get the results. And the same thing is in spirituality. The Bhagavad Gita tells us ways. Krishna says that if you develop detachment from your work, if you develop detachment from the bodily conception, then what do you get? You get the vision of the soul. And you do it, you follow it, and it'll happen. There's no smoke and mirrors over there. It's a process, you follow it, the result is at the end of the process, and you will get it. So in a lecture in MIT, in 68, Prabhupada said, you are all students of technology. This Krishna conscious movement is also another technology. And then he goes there to make the point that just like they have a department for chemistry and biology, they should have a department to study the nature of the soul. So once Prabhupada was in the airport and a reporter came running to him, and he literally pushed the mic into Prabhupada's face, and he asked Prabhupada, how are you different from Hinduism and Buddhism? And Prabhupada immediately replied, we have nothing to do with Hinduism and Buddhism. We are simply presenting the truth, and we hope that you will accept the truth. So Prabhupada uses the word scientific. This is not the entire body of his word, but in the Veda base, there are 10,000 occurrences of the word scientific. And one of the most popular books of Prabhupada is the Science of Self-Realization. Prabhupada always wanted us to make sure that this is a process that if you follow as recommended, you will get the desired results. So when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, he wasn't thinking that I'm speaking a scripture to the Hindu religion. Or when Christ spoke the Bible, he wasn't thinking that I'm speaking. What they were presenting was the absolute truth, which is exactly what is the endeavor that we are all engaging in, whether we are doing science or whether we are doing spirituality. Now, this is not to say that everything that is material is bad or material science is bad. What is bad is when we start looking at it for something that it's not. So science has its place. You know, we have this mic that we are using, this projector. It's all the result of science. So it's kind of like worshipping demigods. You know, demigods are there because they're devotees of Krishna. And understanding the position of the demigod and is glorious. But when we start thinking of them as Krishna, then that's where the problem comes. So that's the interplay that we have. So what we have is not faith versus knowledge. We have simply two different traditions of knowledge. We have knowledge that is, just like we have physics and chemistry. Physics looks at a particular part of the phenomenal world. Chemistry looks at a different part. But it doesn't mean that the world is divided amongst physics and chemistry. It's the same world. So similarly, knowledge and spirituality, they're just looking at two aspects of one's existence. But it's not that they are in opposition to one another or different. So the first assertion that I would like to make is that the epistemology of ontology and science are exactly the same. The only difference is our existential frame of reference. So I was once talking to Radhika Raman Prabhu, and he said that if you have to preach to the Kaya missions, you have to use big words because that impresses them. So if you translate this, it is... how we get spiritual knowledge is exactly the same as how we get scientific knowledge. The only difference is that we are not much interested in the former, and we are conditioned to be obsessed with the latter. That is our existential reality. So maybe I can stop it. Take any quick questions. I don't want to wait till the end, and you may have some question that you may forget by then. So maybe I'll just wait for a few minutes to see if there are any questions. Yes. Yeah. I can, at the end of it, I have my email. I can send the presentation to you if you want. That should be okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. As you have said that in the material world, basically in the knowledge section, one scientist is contradicting the other scientist. But in case of spiritual knowledge also, we see that one Muni is actually contradicting the other Muni. That's why you say Munis come with different ideas. So how we can correlate this to, because that also exists there also.
So that's another way we can say that they are both the same. They are also contradicting and they are also contradicting.
They are just not accepting, as you said, like,
they're not accepting. So it's a good point. Even though sometimes we say that the nature of religion is dogmatic, in the sense that whatever somebody tells you, you take it. But the advancement through the process of spirituality is multifaceted. That's why Krishna gives us so many options. So The contradictions that we see, and I'm talking about the bona fide contradiction, because the Veda itself contradicts it several times. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself contradicts himself at different points. So these are, and the reason that they are is because Krishna wants to cast a wide net. So there's somebody who is reaching the Bhagavad Gita very much interested in working. Krishna says, do karma. Another person, he's more of an academician. So do Gyan. So somebody who is attracted by the mystic opulences, do Astang. Each one at the end of the section, he says, this is the best, this is the greatest. You do this, you'll be perfect. And then after Gyan, he'll say the same thing. Nothing as sublime as transcendental knowledge. Right? So forget about other munis. Even Krishna is contradicting himself. But these contradictions are there only to attract different propensities. And if you are able to reconcile these contradictions, we will not get bewildered by them. Make sense? Okay. Okay, so next is, I want to talk about the interaction of knowledge and faith. So we have established to some extent what is knowledge is, and wanted to talk about how knowledge interacts with faith. So in Bhagavad Gita, right after Arjun says, I'm not going to fight, Krishna, this is the first verse spoken by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, and he says, kutastva kashmalam idam, vishame samapastam, anarya justam, asvarkam, akirti karma arjuna. So he says, anarya. So the word arya, aryan means one who knows. And an aryan is one who does not know. So Krishna does not tell Arjun, how come you have no faith? What does he say? How come you have no knowledge? That why are you behaving like an anaryam? Why is it that you're not acting like an aryan? And then in later on, a few verses down, what does Arjun says? Karpanya dosha pahata swabhava pricham itvam dharma samudha cheta yashriya sham nishitam bruhi tanme shishyasthi tvam shadima tum prapanna. He says, shad, instruct me. He doesn't say that now you inspire me. He is looking for knowledge from Krishna. And if you look at Bhagavad Gita, there is a repeated stress on knowledge and intelligence. Krishna talks about buddhi yoga. Prabhupada translates that to devotional service, and rightly so, can also be translated to intelligence that is properly situated. And interestingly, he'll first talk about faith in the chapter of intelligence. Chapter 4 is transcendental knowledge. That's when he first talks about faith. But repeatedly he will glorify intelligence. Dhiras tatra namuyati, tatva darshabi, ubhav tauna vijnanato. So over and over he talks about intelligence. When Arjun will ask Krishna what kind of a person should he be, then he says, a person who has given up all desire from sense gratification that arises from mental concoction. So basically from lack of intelligence. So the question over here is, does that mean that knowledge is more important than faith? Because Bhagavad Gita is the foundation. Srila Prabhupada would say that it's the undergrad study, right? He would say the undergrad study of Srimad Bhagavatam is graduate and Chaitanya Charitamrita is postgraduate. So it's the foundation. And we see that there is so much stress on knowledge over here. So does it mean that knowledge is more important than faith? So in order to understand this, we have to talk about something that is very, it's a common way by which philosophers analyze the writings of other philosophers. And this is known as the implied frame of reference. So the implied frame of reference is that if something is so obvious, you don't even have to say it. So if there's advertisement saying that this is the way to lose weight, now the implied frame of reference is that nobody likes to be obese. They don't say it. All that they say is, this is how you lose weight. Or there may be something that says that some motivational person will come and say, this is how you will be happy. The implied reference is that nobody is looking around for unhappiness. Everybody is looking for happiness. So they ride on that implied frame of reference. And Prabhupada makes this implicit frame explicit in the introduction. So the introduction to Bhagavad Gita is, now everything that Prabhupada has written is very potent. But the introduction to Bhagavad Gita is specially potent because he has actually condensed the entire scriptures into the introduction. So if you were to analyze the introduction, it is based on Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Dash Mula Tattva. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that there are 10 essential principles of spirituality. Srila Prabhupada's introduction follows an elaboration for those 10 principles. So one of the points that he says is that according to the statements of Bhagavad Gita or the statements of Arjun, the person who is trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita, we should at least theoretically accept, see Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and with that samasya spirit, we can understand the Bhagavad Gita. This is the implied frame of reference. That we will not be able to get the knowledge that Krishna is trying to give us in the Bhagavad Gita unless we have faith in the fact that he is the personality of Godhead. Because if we did not, then what would be the value of Bhagavad Gita? It would be just one person who is espousing their ideas. So Krishna is giving his ideas, I am giving my ideas, my neighbor is giving his ideas, there are millions of ideas. What is the value of them? The only reason Bhagavad Gita has a value because the speaker is the personality of Godhead. Unless we don't accept that. Now in a way it's a little bit of cyclical logic. That the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to convince us that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. And that's why Prabhupada says, at least theoretically. Maybe you don't have that conviction. Maybe it's not there in the way that it is. It is asakti. But at least theoretically you can accept that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. That is the implied frame of reference. So what we can understand is that faith is an important prerequisite to knowledge. And we can relate to it both in the mundane perspective, that when we get knowledge, it begins from faith. Faith in the teacher, faith in the subject matter, faith in the institution. And similarly, when we are proceeding in our discussions on spirituality, they're also based on faith. Srimad Bhagavatam, the very first verse that the Bhagavatam speaks about is that Krishna is God. Because they want us to, so there it is more implicit. That Vyasadeva wants to make sure that we have faith that Krishna is the personality of Godhead before we start reading the Bhagavatam. So the question that now arises, that does bhakti require faith or knowledge or neither? So let's examine these three combinations, no faith and no knowledge. Faith, knowledge but no faith, and faith but no knowledge. So rather than me speak, I wanted have you hear a small snippet of a lecture by Kadamakanand Swami. He's originally from Holland, and it's a very humorous lecture, to say the speak least. Oh, the volume is. Why is it coming from there?
It's HDMI.
Oh. Is there any way to increase the volume? Because this is at... Try now.
So,
Amsterdam calling his dog. And so this was a person who had no faith and no knowledge. He didn't know anything about anything, so to speak. So this is what is known as Agyat Sukriti. That factually there was no knowledge and there was no faith. Now, Agyat Sukriti in itself may not create Krishna consciousness, but it can create circumstances that are favorable to Krishna consciousness. We see that in the example of Prahlad Maharaj. That Prahlad Maharaj, it's not in the Bhagavatam, but in the Puranas is given that in a previous lifetime, he was born in an Asuric family also. And one day, he was waiting in a jungle in a building for his girlfriend to come. And when she came, they quarreled about something. So before she came, he cleaned the whole building because he was hoping to have a good time. But when she came, then they quarreled. And because they quarreled, nothing happened, and they basically just stayed up the whole night. It so happened that the building that they were in was the temple of Lord Narsingadev. And that particular day was Narsingh Chaturdashi. So it was a Gyat Sukriti that he cleaned the temple, he fasted on that day. And because of that, he got the mercy of Narad Muni in his next lifetime. Narad Muni gave him Krishna consciousness. We see that in case of Ajamil, it's a Purvaras. That Ajamil used to chant and then he became sinful. And then when he was near death, he started calling Narayan, Narayan. And he was not calling Narayan in the sense that he was calling Lord Narayan. But because of that Sukriti, then he got remembrance of the fact that he used to worship Lord Narayan. And then he started calling Lord Narayan as the personality of Godhead. So, I had a nice lecture by Prabhupada over here, but I guess it's not working out fine. Prabhupada very nicely then cited faith on the 4th of July in Melbourne, Australia. It's there on Desire Tree. I recommend that you can download and read it. So, Prabhupada makes this point that where do we see faith without knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita? Anybody, where do we see faith beyond knowledge, without knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, in the 17th chapter. So, in the 16th chapter, Krishna had just finished summarizing the fact that there are two kinds of people. The Asuric and the devotees. And what is the difference between the two? That the people who are Asuric do not have any knowledge of the scriptures. They act whimsically. And the people who are devotees act according to what the scriptures tell them. So the 17th chapter opens with Arjuna asking Krishna that what if people do not have any knowledge but they still have faith? What about them? So this is faith without knowledge. And Krishna says it that then they will act according to their swabhav. They will act according to the mode of material nature that they are. Whether they're in the mode of goodness, passion or ignorance. So when somebody has faith without any knowledge, and in this lecture Prabhupada makes the point that if he is in the mode of goodness, then he will attract the mercy of the devotees. And that will basically start their devotional life. The third part is knowledge without faith. And this is a very interesting, it's a series of lectures Ravindra Swarup Prabhu gave on the topic of, so when he talks about his own introduction to Krishna consciousness, so he was initially, so he was a student of religion. And when he found out about the Hare Krishnas, he had read the Bhagavad Gita. So he was an impersonalist. Basically, his whole program was that eventually I'll merge into God and become God. So he would go to the temple, and then he said that everything that happened in the temple was completely in line with the conception that he had. He said they're worshipping the deity because they're immature in their understanding of their own divinity. So they are only worshipping the deities so that they can fix their mind on something before they are able to fix their mind on nothing. And he would look at them that, you know, these are people who are, you know, basically kindergartners of spirituality. They're trying to, so he was, you know, he would go there, he would also worship the deities, he was chanting. And then he says, one day he was sitting and eating prasadam, and a devotee sitting next to him, he was preaching to somebody new in the temple, and he made this point that you have to understand that Krishna is a person. So Ravindra Prabhu says that when he heard that, he says that he immediately understood the difference in his philosophical conception and that of ISKCON. So he got up, he left the temple, and he resolved that he will never come to the temple again. So he stopped coming to the temple, he stopped chanting. And the only problem he said that he faced was that he had got addicted to chanting by then. So he said, okay, I'll chant, but I won't see those guys again. They're really messed up. So he started chanting, but he wouldn't go back to the temple. And the problem that he said was, and this is a problem in a good way, the problem he said is that when he started chanting, he almost felt driven to associate with the devotees again. So he started going back to the temple. And he said that a funny thing happened. On my way to getting a PhD in religion, I became a devotee of Krishna. So from an academic student of religion, I became a religious student of academics. So he had knowledge, but he did not have faith. And where did that faith come from? The faith came from the association of devotees. And we see that in the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami also, their knowledge, different way. They were not like Mayavadis, they were Brahmavadis. But also very quickly when they had Vaishnava Sangha, they became devotees. So whether there is knowledge or no knowledge, whether there is faith or no faith, and we have seen in this three example, bhakti manifests itself. How does it manifest? Through the association of devotees. Now the important thing is, what is it that we get through the association of devotees? We get faith. So when we start associating with devotees, and all of us have had this experience on both sides of the fence, you know, then they'll come to you and then they'll quote shlokas and they'll say, you know, this is what it is. But actually, what impresses the other person is the sincerity with which the person is saying. When Prabhupada used to preach in the early days, most of the people had very little idea what he was talking about. He had a thick Bengali accent. The subject that he was speaking about was completely new to them. And if you look at Prabhupada's speeches in 66, 67, they're not at all different from what he spoke in 75, 76. Same kind of, he would say Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same aspects he would give. But if you hear some of the memories of Prabhupada's earlier disciples, you know, they said that we were all impressed by the fact that whatever Swamiji was wanting to tell us, he seemed to be very convinced about it. So, knowledge we taught, faith is caught. That's the difference. And how do you catch? How do you catch an infection? You hang out with the person who is infected. Right? How do you catch faith? You hang out with the person who has faith. So, actually, faith is what starts everything moving. That whether it is implicit or explicit, faith is the source of bhakti also, and faith is the source of the knowledge that comes from bhakti. In fact, faith is so powerful that even if there is no knowledge, faith will carry you through. There is the pastime of the illiterate Brahman and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that there was an illiterate Brahman who would sit and read Bhagavad Gita. And then as he would read, he would cry, and everybody was laughing at him because he was illiterate. And the Mahaprabhu asked him that, why are you crying? And he said, my Guru Maharaj asked me to read the Bhagavad Gita every day, and even though I don't know how to read, but I still read it on his instructions. And then Mahaprabhu asked him again, why are you crying? And he said, I'm crying because when I see on the cover of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is carrying Arjun, then understanding the mood of the God that mood of the Lord, that he is willing to execute such menial service for his devotee, it touches my heart. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you actually understood the Bhagavad Gita completely. So faith is so strong that it can carry everything. We see that in Dhruva Maharaj, that when he started out from his house, only thing that he had was faith in the instruction of his mother Suniti, that you go to the forest, seek out Lord Narayan, and he will help you. And then on the way he met Narad Muni, and Narad Muni said, you do the following things. That's about it. He was a young boy of five years. He didn't have much knowledge. And he just did it. And that faith took him all the way to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. In fact, when Lord Vishnu appeared, then he did not even have any knowledge of the Vedas. He didn't even know how to glorify Lord Vishnu. So when Lord Vishnu touched him by the conch, then he got the knowledge. So Prabhupada would say that, this is in the purport of 3.3, a religion without philosophy is sentiment, or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So even though faith is very potent, one of the manifestations of faith is knowledge. So we should not stay in that area of, because what does it mean to be true to a process? That you are true to all the aspects of the process, not to the ones that you like. Like when you surrender to a spiritual master, whether your Guru Maharaj tells you that you get up early in the morning, so there are things that he might tell you that may be a little difficult for you, and there are things that he might tell you that may be pleasing to you. But the nature of faith is that you accept everything, one way or the other. So we need knowledge to know what to do, and we need faith to be able to do it. Both of them have to go hand in hand. So just knowledge is mental speculation. Just faith is an incomplete understanding. It's really being lazy. So we need to have both. We need to have the knowledge to know what to do. We have to chant, we have to follow the four regulative principles, we have to serve the devotees, and then we should have the faith to actually do it. Not just once, not just twice, but over and over again. So both faith and knowledge are needed to make spiritual advancements, but of the two, faith is much more important because it attracts the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, and they can easily bestow knowledge. So one thing that we need to, and again, we cannot say that tomorrow we will develop faith. There is a process to develop faith, but we have to be cognizant of the importance of faith in our own spiritual developments. So I wanted to take a pause again and see if there is any questions, comments.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, very nice explanation. I had two thoughts. One is that I was looking for that quote, Yasya Deve Parabhakti, Yatha Deve Tatha Guru, because that's the overall presentation that you're doing. It seemed to be based on that, that basic verse. Now talking about that example of South Indian Brahmana, when he received the instruction from his spiritual master that he should study Bhagavad Gita, so a natural thought that would come is that if he's illiterate, he's supposed to get literate, and then he would approach Bhagavad Gita as part of the preparation. So I just wonder, like, why that part is not attempted.
That's a good question. I have no idea. Do you have any thoughts on it?
I wanted to hear your thoughts.
I don't know.
Okay.
Anything else? Yes, please.
So you are saying faith is more important than knowledge. So it just makes sense. But in trying circumstances, we see that one's faith may be checked, but it's the knowledge that we have heard and from the spiritual master that sometimes carries us through the action. So sometimes I wonder, and if let's say the circumstance is longer time, like I've seen that it's mostly knowledge. Although I do understand that faith is more subtle and it's important, and knowledge is something that we can more perceive and So if you could share some thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. So that's a very good question, and it actually leads us to this. To this understanding that at one point there will be no difference between faith and knowledge. Because what we know, we practice based on our faith. So the point that you're making is that if you're under trying circumstances and maybe let's assume your body is giving you trouble. So you have the knowledge that you're not the body, right? But will that knowledge be sufficient for you to transcend that situation, that all the anxiety that you're feeling because of the body? In itself, it's not. The reason you're actually able to do it is because of your faith in that knowledge. That's when you're able to internalize that knowledge. So ultimately, it is this this merging of knowledge and faith that carries the devotee through their spiritual life. Is that okay? Yes, sir.
Adin 241, after he quotes this verse, Shraddha Shabde Vishwasakhe Sudhiranishya, first thing he writes is, faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. So there may be, so sublime means there may be something that is, we may not be able to, we may not have knowledge about it, but there is a trust, unflinching trust in something sublime.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So, final section, I wanted to bring it together and talk about how faith and knowledge, they play with one another or interplay with one another in the progression of bhakti. So, Prabhupada did not recommend blind faith. Prabhupada said you should not have blind faith. Just as reason can be misplaced, so can faith. And Prabhupada would say that both absurd inquiry and blind faith are condemned. Sometimes in one of the class, somebody asked Prabhupada that there were so many people living in Dwarka, what was the drainage system over there? And Prabhupada said, this is an absurd inquiry. He says, what's the point? Another point, somebody said that in the Bhagavatam it is given that there were 10 billion guards in Dwarka. And then somebody asked him that how did the 10 billion guards fit in in the city of Dwarka? And Prabhupada again said that when you find out, you will know it. The point that he made was when you reach that level of understanding, you will automatically understand. So I want to read a quote on 439 that, but faith should not be blind. Blind faith is useless. Now we have already discussed that one should go to the spiritual master with surrender, inquiry and service. Three things. Without knowledge, without questions, you cannot make progress. So blind faith is never required, nor should questions be in a mood of challenge. Questions or answers should be just to understand. And that should be accompanied with service. That is the correct. So, now, the interesting thing over here is that blind faith is like misplaced faith. That you have faith in something that is you do not know about. So, with faith and knowledge, one can make progress from from being a Kanishta, from a neophyte, to a medium, to an advanced stage. So, because I love graphs, I had to put it in. So, if you look at the interaction between faith and knowledge, so one begins there. So if you look at the progress of devotees, when they are in the early stage of devotional service, when they are Kanishta Adhikaris, then they have weak faith and weak knowledge. And so this is at this stage. And then they become Madhyam Adhikaris by having strong faith, and they still have weak knowledge. And then they become Uttam Adhikari, and at this point they have strong faith and strong knowledge. So a point to think about it over here is that if bhakti primarily moves on the axis of faith, so this is the axis of faith. So we are so long making the statement that bhakti grows on faith, but what we see over here is that from Madhyam to Uttam, it does not grow on faith; it is growing on knowledge. Why is that? Does that mean that knowledge is more relevant later on? So this is let's park this point. I just wanted to put this question out there for you to think, and we'll come to it a little later on. So in an attempt to, I guess, address that, so this is a seminar on faith, and almost everybody will talk to you about the 9 stages of bhakti. So by the time you're done with this, you will know the 9 stages inside out. So I'm not going to go through all of them. I assume all of you probably know that to a great extent. But I wanted to talk about the progression on the axis of faith. That what is the first stage of the beginning of bhakti? It is adoshraddha. It is weak faith. And then out of that faith, you have this faith that the other person associating with another devotee will be beneficial to you. So on that faith, what do? Sadhu sangha. Then you develop faith in what they are telling you. So when you associate with devotees, they'll say, chant, do this, do that. So based on the faith that you have, on the instructions of the other devotees that you're associating with, you do bhajan kriya. And as you execute bhajan kriya, your faith increases, and then anartha nivritti. So anartha nivritti is a very critical and interesting state, because what happens over there is that your object of faith changes. The reason that we have anartha is because we have faith in the material world. That is the root cause of our anarthas. That we have faith that by enjoying our senses, we will actually experience happiness. We have faith that our endeavors will give us protection. And at the stage of anartha nivritti, we begin to have faith in the spiritual conception. So when we change the object of our faith, all those anarthas, or the majority of them, will actually leave you. And what you're left with is strong faith, which is nishtha. And then it goes to ruchi and ashakti and bhava and prem. So in Bhakti Vivek, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he kind of maps them to these 3 stages. The Shraddha is what a Kanishtha Adhikari would have, a Madhyam would have, Sadhu Sangh Bhajana Kriya, and Anartha Nivritti Nishtha, and Ruchi and Ashakti is there in an Uttam Adhikari. Now, at this point I want to present to you something that is a little different. That, we have seen over here the progress of a devotee on the axis of knowledge. But when we look at the residents of Vrindavan, they have very little knowledge. And we especially see this interaction between bhakti and jnana in the pastime of Uddhav. So when Uddhav went, Uddhav was also a great devotee of Krishna, but he was more in the conception of knowledge. So when he went, Krishna sent him to Vrindavan to console the gopis and his parents. And if you look at the conversation, it is an interaction between faith and knowledge. Uddhav says that Krishna is the cause of all causes. And Yashoda Mai says, what are you speaking? He's my child. I gave birth to him. And then Uddhav says that he is the supplier of everything. And Yashoda Mai says that, you know, but if I don't give him milk, he starts crying. And then he says that he is feared by fear personified. And Nand Maharaj says that, you know, if he sees his reflection in the pots, he gets scared. Every time there is a thunder, he comes running and he hides himself in his mother's sari. And then Uddhav goes to the gopis and he starts talking about Krishna's the Paramatma in everybody. And gopis say, we are not really interested in Paramatma, interested in. And there is a pastime of the Brahmin and the cobbler boy, and the cobbler. So actually I had a video of Prabhupada reciting it. We'll not do it just because of this. But how many of you know this pastime of the Brahmin and the cobbler? Everybody knows it. So that is again a representation of faith versus knowledge. That Lord Vishnu said that the cobbler, he had implicit faith, whereas the Brahman did not. So implicit faith should not be confused with blind faith. So sometimes when we see very advanced devotees, and if you go to Vrindavan, Rajvasi, you see they have strong faith in Krishna, but it is not to be confused with blind faith. Because implicit faith comes from realizations, and blind faith comes because of lack of conviction. So, going on to this, on this channel of what is pure devotional service, so this is a very famous verse, all of you know, Anibilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulena Krishnanu Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttamam, that when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So what it appears is that by the time bhakti becomes Shuddha bhakti, knowledge is actually considered to be an impediment. So if you were to look at our graph, then Shuddha bhakti means that knowledge goes down to almost zero. This is the stage of Anabhilashita Shunyam, where there is unshakable faith but no knowledge. So the question is, where does Jnana disappear? Right? So does that mean that you, at one stage you sit and you try and forget everything? Valid, this is not valid. What happens to the Jnana that has so far helped you to make progress? So let's search for this missing knowledge. What happens to this knowledge? In the 13th chapter, when Arjun asks Krishna, he asked him several questions. One of them that he asked him is, what is knowledge? And then Krishna gives a list of items for what is knowledge. And what you will see is that none of them are in the category of knowledge. He talks about humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control. So when I first read it, I thought, you know, there is a gap over here. Arjuna is asking about knowledge and Krishna is telling him humility, pridelessness. You would not think that it has anything to do with knowledge. However, there are attributes of, these are all attributes of knowledge. So there are two kinds of knowledge. One is having knowledge about Krishna and the second is knowing Krishna. So the first is academic, the second is experiential. The first is Jnana, the second is Vijnana. So that is what happens to Jnana as we make progress. That it transforms to Vijnana. So it does not really disappear. What it does is that, and this is goes back to the point that the question was asked over here, that when you're facing, when you're in some kind of anxiety, how does knowledge help you? The knowledge helps you because when, if it has become realized knowledge, when jnana has become vigyan. When does jnana start becoming vigyan? It starts beginning to have, so it begins to have stages. The primary point when it starts happening in a significant manner is at anartha nivritti. Because what happens at anartha nivritti? Our faith has, the object of our faith has changed. We no longer have changed faith in the material conception, we have only faith in the spiritual conception. When we begin to act on that platform of faith, the knowledge that we have acquired or will continue to acquire becomes realizations. So realization means it's no longer in the platform of the mind, it's in the platform of the heart. That's what Shraddha. Shraddha means, if you look at the Sanskrit word Shraddha, it means one that comes from the heart. And that's what happens to knowledge also, that it starts coming from heart. So essentially, knowledge becomes the same as faith. So Prabhupada says that, this is in the 241, the whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically. That's the point he's making. That you just, so all of us know that we are not the body. How many of us act on that platform, that we are not the body? Very few. It's very difficult to act on that platform. That we have been practicing Krishna consciousness for so many years. I've been practicing for about 20 years. But the moment I fall sick, I rush to a doctor. I start worrying about what's going to happen to me, and I need to take a medicine. There is still, at an experiential level, there is still a lot of attachment to the body, because the intellectual knowledge has not been converted into realized knowledge. So essentially what's happening is that this graph still continues to go up. The only thing is, if we change knowledge to be jnana and vigyan, then we'll see that on the axis of faith, the knowledge will continue to go up. And then there are many supporting verses. So I want to leave some time for questions. But this is Bhakti Amam Abhijanati Yamanyas Chashmi Tatpata, that one can know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by devotional service. The famous Vodata Sakrishna Namadi Nabhavedrad Indriya, that one can only appreciate me as the God, as the Personality of Godhead by senses that have been purified by devotional service. Yasya Deva Parabhaktir, this is a famous verse from Shvetashvatar Upanishad. This is the last verse there, where they give all the objects of knowledge, and the last one that they say, only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. So this is the transition from jnana to vigyan. So let's try and quickly put together everything that we have understood. So based on faith or Shraddha, one makes inquiry and gets knowledge. So based on faith, one gets some jnana. Based on this knowledge, one acts. So all of you can relate to it. If you think back to the times that you came to your to Krishna consciousness, some of you may have been born into it, but for those of you who took to it, that at some point you were told what does it mean to be a devotee, and then you started acting on it. That is sadhana vaidhi bhakti. It's external. You're doing it because intellectually you're convinced about the potency of it. This attracts the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. So it's not our endeavor. The fact that we are practicing it, even though we may be doing it half-heartedly, even though we may be doing it imperfectly, but the fact that we are making that endeavor attracts the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. one of the things that Prabhupada disciples will all often say, when I was in Mayapur, I was talking to some of them, and I said, are you Prabhupada disciple? And they would say, I'm trying to be. Right? Because it's not that they become qualified to be a disciple of Prabhupada, but they have received the mercy of Prabhupada. This mercy manifests as realizations, vigya. So it is only the mercy of Krishna and his devotees that will actually give us the experiential understanding of what we intellectually know. Then this realized knowledge increases our faith, and so the spiral goes on. The interesting thing is both buddhi and both faith and knowledge come from buddhi, from one's intelligence. And they're both intrinsically present in Krishna, so they are also qualities of the soul. So one way to understand is that when we learn something, we are actually uncovering something that we already know. So once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, Swamiji, what is it that you are trying to teach us? And Prabhupada said, I'm not trying to teach you anything. I'm trying to remind you of that which you have forgotten. So this is the cycle of spiritual growth. From Shraddha comes Gyan. Gyan comes Bhakti. From Bhakti comes Kripa. From Kripa comes Vigyan. And Vigyan increases our Shraddha. And then it becomes a spiral. So it's not that we move in a circle. So the next time the Vigyan feeds into the Shraddha, we are at a higher level of faith. So the knowledge that we get is a little bit deeper. And the activities that we do will be more in a greater sense of commitment. The mercy that will be attract will be more, and the faith that is strong, that will ultimately take us from a stage where we are asking for spiritual advancement to the stage where Krishna will come and rescue us from this material world. So devotional service attracts the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. This mercy transforms knowledge to realizations and strengthens faith. This is the key to making spiritual advancements. So, conclusion, just wanted to put everything together. Spirituality is based on scientific knowledge. That was the first assertion that we made. Both faith and knowledge are needed to make spiritual advancement. Of the two, faith is more important because it attracts the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. This mercy transforms knowledge to realizations and strengthens faith. And the last, which is very important because we are all practicing devotees, the key to making spiritual advancement is to act on one's faith and patiently anticipate the wonderful realizations that will come. So these three things are very closely related. Faith, knowledge, and the fact that we need to act upon it. Unless we act upon it, we will not attract the mercy. And unless we don't get the mercy, we will never get the realizations. And unless we don't get the realizations, we will never go to the higher stage of faith and knowledge and realizations. So very, very important for us to act upon it. Sometimes we, especially when we are talking to people who are new, even before they have faith and knowledge, we start asking them to act upon it. Because the process attracts mercy. So, in case any of you need a copy of this presentation, you can send me an email. I'll send that to you. Also want to stop and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I was just stuck with the comparing mundane science with spiritual science. And the way things work there is that we have hypothesis, that is what you would call as jnana here. And then you conduct experiments, and then you have certain constraints added to the experiment to make it look like or end result what you want, you know, you can make it based on those constraints. But here, you don't have experiments. Instead, you have bhakti and you have kripa. So it's not the same thing. But still we are reaching to the same thing, which is Vigyan in both sense. I mean, theory here, it'll be Vigyan, and here, this is Vigyan.
Right.
And also I had a little bit problem with the graph, because how would you quantify it? And when you're showing graph, depending on what you show on the axis, your graph would show something else. So, I mean, that those are the things where I was stuck, maybe.
So, I think with respect to the with respect to the first point, what we are talking about here is different stages in advancements. So, when a person is initially taking to spirituality, and it was certainly true in my case, that it was taken in the mood of an experiment. That somebody came and told that, do this and see what happens, right? And as we did it, when the promised results started coming through, then it was no longer an experiment. It basically became our lives at that point. So what you're saying is right, that we don't encourage experimenting with spirituality, but our introduction to Krishna consciousness is in itself an, to some extent, till the time we have Anishta Bhakti, we are still experimenting. That I was talking to Prabhu, and I was just appreciating the fact that he's completely surrendered to serving Kishore Kishore. He's a grahastha, but he has given up his job, and he's just serving the deities. And I was like, in my mind, I was thinking it's a difficult experiment to do. And Prabhu is not doing it as an experiment. But at some stage, if I were to do it, I would be like, let me do it and see what happens. And of course, the mercy of the deities are there, they'll make it happen. So till the time that we are Anishtha, there is always that sense of trying to figure things out. So actually there is a lot of parallel between the two. That's what you do in science, right? You said that you get a theory, you go to the lab, you work it out, and if you do it properly, you get the results, right? And then you go and get the next theory that's a little bit more advanced, and then you do that and you get the results. And that's how your faith in science goes up. So it's almost exactly the same. The only difference is that the object is different. The object in one case is material, and the object in the other case is spiritual. Yeah. Is that okay? Is that I think your question about graph is I won't read too much on the graphs that I made. I make them just because they help me get a pictorial understanding. You know, at one point I was trying to write I was writing equations on bhakti. That B is equal to C to the power of H, where B is bhakti, C is chanting, and H is humility. So you know, the amount of chanting that you do with humility will exponentially increase your bhakti. I didn't think a lot of people would give me credibility over there. But it's, we have a tendency to objectify things for our own convenience. So it's just that there's something that can never get objectified. This is one of them.
I'm a physicist, so I mean, these things do attract me. But at the same time, it gets me into some vacuum where I cannot understand, because I'm trying to get more out of it. But
we'll work on an equation together. Prabhu had a question.
Thank you.
So first of all, like the knowledge as I see is really vigyan that you are plotting. Is that instead of saying gyan plus vigyan, would probably better to say vigyan?
Not really. The point I was making is that what we get earlier on in our devotional service is more of gyan. And as we start practicing more, getting more mercy, it turns to vigyan. If you consider them both to be fungible, then this graph would be true. So the point that I made is that, you know, you earlier on read the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, you know, Krishna says, no, you're not your body. Mm-hmm. He says, okay, that's jnana. Right? You practice devotional service, you chant, you serve your Guru Maharaj, and you begin to get this realization that you're actually not your body. Right? That is vijnana.
Okay.
The tattva is the same. Okay. But how you process it depends upon your level of faith there.
And the second question is about really the curve not being a straight line. Because based on the understanding that you gave, the faith and vijnana are growing kind of proportion. It may seem like as if the faith is not growing significantly, but the knowledge is growing more than the faith. And that's the part I was having struggle. I would have expected it to be a straight line.
To be 45 degrees.
Yes. Either 45 or I don't care about the angle, but I would have expected it to be a straight line.
Like a horizontal line?
No. 60 degrees, let's say 60 degrees.
Oh, this is 60 degrees.
No, what I mean is, I don't see the point. I don't see the point about the faith.
45. Yeah. So I guess the point that I guess the essential point that you're trying to make is that faith should also go proportionately.
Yes.
With this, and to some extent, I did think about it. See what happens is that. When you start growing on the platform of vijnana, mm-hmm. then really speaking, the draft doesn't hold true because vijnana is also shraddha. That's the point I made.
Right.
That vijnana is also shraddha.
Right.
Right. So when jnana becomes vijnana, then the vertical axis is actually jnana plus vijnana plus shraddha.
Right.
They're both there. So whether it grows on one axis or other, it's the same because I think you made this point, or maybe Prabhu made the point, that unflinching faith in something sublime.
Okay.
Right? And this can be translated to both. It can be translated to knowledge,
right.
and it can be translated to faith.
Right.
And the reason it can be because it is talking about realizations
right.
at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, my question was arising from the fact that it seems like the faith is not faith is growing less than the knowledge, and that's why I say that.
I see your point. I guess the point I'm making is that the vijnana part is taking off faith. But I see your point. Any other questions, comments? Okay, so thank you very much. Vanchakalpataru Vishakapasindu Vivacha, Paritanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha.